No.
So what did you just say before we started this recording?
What did I say?
A little catchphrase?
I don't think so.
Yeah, you said, let's ride.
Yeah, it's not a catchphrase. It's just like I'm ready to go. Let's do this thing.
But of all the catchphrases you could steal, you're stealing Russell Wilson's?
That's not his catchphrase, first of all. That's a very common phrase before he did it, but let's ride.
Yeah, but you even did the accent. Like, you did the fake accent that he does in the video.
That's
like
my normal...
you're from the South all of a sudden.
That's my normal speaking voice. I don't know what to tell you. Let's ride.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Nerd Soup. I am Bo Oliver, joined here today with Aaron, and we are back to talk about Season 2 of Invincible, Part 2. So I imagine that many people at home didn't even know that this was coming out because of the way Amazon has botched this release schedule. And it is something that I find to be very frustrating now, because it's a show that I really enjoy. And I find myself having to try and remember what happened in the first half of the season in order to get ready for this second half, which, once again, diving right back into it, it was very good. And I'm wondering if, Aaron, if you thought the same, but I guess we'll get your thoughts a little bit later in the episode. But yeah, follow us on social medias at NerdSoup, at BoSoup, at NerdSoupMonkey. No plug for Teddy because he doesn't get the Invincible screeners. I don't know. He's got like an issue with Jeff Bezos. There's some sort of beef there. But yeah, Aaron, how's it going? How are you?
Fucking tired, man. This daylight saving thing is kicking my ass.
It's a scam.
Dude, it's the worst. But like, and it's never hit me this bad before, but I've been just exhausted ever since the change. It's only in an hour, but the
big
napping.
Daylight.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy the extra daylight, but at what cost?
Yeah, no, we should just change that.
Just keep it.
Yeah, just keep it. I think Ben Frank said it as a joke, and then everybody adopted it. I don't know if that's actually true.
He was always joking, though. So, hey, would it be funny if I lit this key on a kite? See what happened? That was just a big bit.
That was just a prank?
Yeah, he was just hanging with the fellas.
The revolution was a prank, too. He's like, yo, you guys think I could form a country in your 70s? I don't know, Ben.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to go ahead to France for a little.
Bro, was fucking in France. He was just a playboy.
Yeah, I feel like the standards weren't that high in the revolutionary times. And I feel like you didn't even have to have your real teeth and you're still macking. I mean, if the play has anything to say about it, apparently Alexander Hamilton was hot shit back in the day, but I've seen a $10 bill. That dude's gross. I don't know. On the $10 bill, I mean, that's just, they all look like George Washington, except for Ben Franklin.
Ben Frank's portrait is funny because he does look like he's judging you. Bro, you're throwing this again at the strip club? Hunnits? Hunnits?
Man, I ain't seeing no Franklins. I'm seeing no Grants. Barely even seeing a Jackson. I'd be straight Lincolns and Washingtons, man. It's hard out here.
What are you, in middle school? Get your fucking pocket full of lunch money.
I haven't had cash since like 2012. Then you run into a random place that doesn't take card and you're just like, well, what am I supposed to do? It's like, I can pay for this, but I literally can't.
All of a sudden you're washing dishes for the mafia. All right, let's get to this review of Invincible Season 2, Part 2, Episode 5. As I said in our introduction, I thought it was a really good episode. The family stuff between Mark and his mom and his dad and now his brother continues to really impress me. I think the writing there for a character like Debbie, once again, following up from the first half of Season 2, it's still really strong. Mark is still just a guy you want to root for. He's so likable. Perfect voice casting with Steven Yeun. I thought the stuff with the Guardians in this episode was really funny. These superheroes, these teams, whenever they go into a fight, you're thinking, oh man, they're about to fuck shit up. And something terrible always happens. So that's just a funny reoccurring thing about this show. And the Viltrumite stuff, the world building, if you want to call it that, kind of expanding the horizons of where the show is going. I thought that final scene was awesome. It made me laugh, and then it made me get into my... This is why I love the superhero shit, because I was instantly like, oh, we're going to get a Alan, Mark, Peter Cullen, Omni-Man team up? That's awesome. But in the meantime, we got to do the stuff with the Martians and the family stuff with Mark. Just another good episode, and this release schedule really sucks, man, because people are really frustrated by it, and I totally get it. And I agree with them. It's been ridiculous. Why not just wait to drop this entire season 2 right now?
Well, and I think this would have been a better episode to kind of, well, maybe not, depending on how the rest of the season goes. But
right, because if you only have three more after this and you're going to want to wait, and it's like, just wait for the last three?
Well, some shows have done it well. I think most notably Breaking Bad's final season, and you see a lot of series like that, like in their final season, but you still get a lot of episodes before then. I'm not sure it's ever been a 4-4 type situation like this, but the payoff that, I don't even know if it's a payoff, but like, at the end, when this happens, you're kind of like, what are those characters' names again that just fucking died? Like, it's like you lose, it's not to say like you don't care, but like, all the investment and momentum is kind of taking a back seat. And then to get that right out the gates from the break, you're kind of like, okay, yeah, like it was a good episode and all in a vacuum. But when you view it as a whole and how most people watch shows, I don't think there's a huge contingent of fans of the show that are going to go back and rewatch season one and the part one of season two before they see this. Like you said, they might not even know if season two, part two is out yet, and they'll just jump right in and you kind of hit with like this big climactic finale. And you're like, well, I kind of lost my investment in some of these characters just by not seeing them or like real remembering their story up until this moment. And yeah, it's a lot of catch up. You're kind of like, oh, how did we get here again? Like, yeah, I remember the stuff with Mark, the big stuff with Mark and his father and his brother, but like the intricate details of all the other side characters back home, you're kind of still playing catch up a little bit on.
Yeah, no, that's why it's upsetting, because, or that's why it kind of sucks, because you really do have to go back and rewatch. I'm sure there are people with better memories, but there are certain characters with Mark. I understand that he's recovering from, you know, what happened at the end of season one, and the relationship with his mom is a little icy and they're working through that in their own ways. But even just picking back up, you understand where they're at emotionally, but narratively, gun to my head, what did Mark do in season two, episode two? I couldn't tell you. Like, and I think that does hurt the overall momentum of the season and the way you enjoy it, the way you remember it.
Right. Like, did Monster Girl and Robot have a problem at the end of last half season? Where, like, she
was...
Yeah,
right. Or this could be new, because both kind of fit.
Exactly. But I was like, wait, did I miss something? Or, like, am I misremembering? Or, like, was this building up to something? Or was this just the start of their kind of, like, a snag in their relationship? I don't know. I still don't know.
I remember the Thraxon stuff very well, because that was the final episode, and it was awesome to see Mark and Omni-Man fighting against the Viltrumites, trying to save this planet, and the slow aging. Once again, we figured maybe Mark's brother, I don't know if they did say this in the first half or in that episode, that he was going to age a bit slower, but eventually he would team up with Mark in one way or another, because he is Omni-Man's kid. He's going to be very powerful. So seeing that pick up was cool. Mark helping out with the recovery of the planet and them giving him the ship back home, and Andressa explaining that she's already an older woman and this kid's not going to have any family. It's a fucked up situation that they've put this kid in.
Yeah, it's got to be tough. It's like, even when he's on Earth too, it's, I think he said something like he's going to be...
He's purple.
Yeah, yeah. But he's still going to age quicker than an Earthling, it seems like, they alluded to. So maybe a little bit slower. Which no,
he's going to age like Chris Hemsworth's Thor, where he's just 10,000 years. He's just 30 and hot.
Well, that's kind of like with Mark. I mean, he kind of aged normal up until this point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. He is going to slow down. Maybe he'll just have a normal human life with the Viltrumite DNA and the human DNA. Just creates a nice little... Or no, the Thraxon DNA.
Yeah, that shit freaks me out. Remember, you ever Tuck Everlasting? It was like a movie and book we read in elementary school. And like this dude just lived forever. And it's like, oh, well, that's sad. He's probably really lonely.
Yeah, eternal life, it's something that we think, oh, that's great, but it does kind of seem like it could be viewed as a curse. Oh, that's no, how Omni-Man viewed it.
The concept of heaven freaks me the fuck out. I don't know what's worse, like just one day the lights being on or then having to live forever in eternity.
Yeah, that's a conversation that we'll need Teddy here for. I don't think we can have that conversation without Teddy.
No, yeah, I'll spiral. But yeah, like you said, though, it was a good episode. It's fun to be back into this world. I just wish they cleaned it up a little bit better with the release schedule. It's kind of like with Attack on Titan. Like, once we got that finale, I think the wait was worth it because it was just so good. You know, the first episode was good, but We'll see how the rest of the season plays out. And if it's, you know, something where it looks like, yeah, there's a reason why we had to wait and they were working on this and to make it absolutely perfect and it blows us away, then you can kind of forgive it. But I think a lot of people are still going to be a little bit soured on that aspect of the show. But like you said, once you turn it on and start watching it, you realize why you like the show so much. And the reason why the wait sucks so much is because of how much you do like it. So
yeah, and I'm sure many people are going to feel that way. And I've seen it. It's killed the momentum for a lot of people.
Yeah, you know, I wonder, because if you look at something like The Boys, I guarantee when you look at the numbers from, well, these streaming services always lie, but I feel like if you had the real numbers from Amazon every season, you would see an increase. With this, I wouldn't be surprised if there's a decrease.
No, yeah, that would be very unfortunate, especially because it looks like they have plans for future spinoffs and live action stuff. And the first season was just really good, and a lot of people liked it. It went viral. Those last two episodes, everybody was talking about it. But I, you know, once again, the episode that we got here is very good. And, you know, certain things that I liked, once again, I loved all the Debbie stuff. I think that they've written her character in such a way that she's just not an afterthought. She's not a secondary character for all the superhero stuff and the supernatural aspects and the bigger world building. Just the way they write their interactions, like when she says something that she regrets and she'll pause and apologize. I think that writing could be lost in a lot of these superhero shows, or is lost in a lot of these superhero shows, because they forget to make these characters human. They get too caught up in the spectacle, and this show never does that, even though the spectacle is usually awesome and takes your breath away and hits you with all these, you know, moments that either disgust you or surprise you or you feel elation, but those smaller moments hit just as hard. And even Mark, being mature enough to realize this kid has nobody, it sucks that Omni-Man keeps doing this to us, that Dad keeps laying all his problems at our front doorstep, but I can't turn my back on him. And that's why Mark, once again, he's a great Superman stand-in.
Oh, yeah, that's a lot to ask for her. I mean, especially like Mark, you understand because like it is his blood, but for Debbie, after going through all she did with Nolan and kind of almost barely like just barely getting over it in some sense. Like you see, she gets the wine, but then she kind of was like, no, maybe I'll, I don't need it anymore. And then this happens. She's like, yeah, maybe I'll pop that open. But like, you know, just by that move alone, it's kind of like, okay, maybe she's finally moving past this situation. And then she's giving something that's going to be a constant reminder of Nolan. And it's not the kid's fault, obviously, but it's just hard to kind of separate the two, especially so just coming off of that tragic event in your life.
Yeah, that is tough, man. That guy is such an asshole. He does the same thing, and you're stuck taking care of the baby that he had with another woman. It's a lot.
And he arguably likes them more. hadn't tried to kill that baby.
No, that is true. Well, that baby also didn't try to kill him, so you have to remember that. Mark did throw the first punch. And we don't know, honestly. Who knows how Nolan disciplined that poor child? We only saw Nolan when he needed Mark's help.
Yeah, and I think it does help that they die in like 3 days. So I was like, yeah, I can be a good dad for 3 days.
Yeah, I can make it.
That was pretty good for like 18 years. You know, people forget that. Everyone wants to talk about the end, but got that boy to college.
You know what they say? It's not how you finish. It's about how you do in the middle.
Yep.
It's all about the dash, baby.
I mean, you put up 50 in the first three quarters and finished the game with 55. You still put up 55, you know?
Double nickel, yeah. I was starting to think maybe Mark's personal life was becoming repetitive in the story, but I think the way that they inserted Cecil in those moments, like when he's trying to catch up with his friends and Amber, and Cecil just scares the shit out of him using that transportation device, that's actually what made it more interesting and less repetitive, at least in this episode, because it seems to be a reoccurring thing with him and his friends and him and Amber having to keep the secrets and the way the relationship is weighing on them. But him having the pushback with Cecil makes it more interesting because this is a guy with so many plans. He's pulling a lot of strings behind the scenes. So friction between him and Mark, it reminds you of friction between like Batman and Superman. So those scenes are always fun.
His personal, I like the stuff with his mom a lot. Like you said, with his like friends and things, it's not like uninteresting, but it's there are more other interesting things going on. And that's what I appreciated about like the Adventures of Superman. I don't know if you watched that. It's driven by his relationships and then everything around him being Superman. Doesn't necessarily take a back seat, but you know, I think it's not as one-sided. Here I feel like at times it gets a little like, well, let's get on to the good stuff. Yeah. But yeah, I think the more we see a Cecil, the more just confused he makes me. He's an interesting guy. I like to believe that he's like a good guy, but willing to do the dirty things, but he's questionable at times. That's what makes him fascinating and always interesting when he pops on screen.
Yeah, he's so much better than Nick Fury. Because Nick Fury, they always talked about it, but they never really showed it. Until Winter Soldier, where he's doing some sketchy things. But Caesar's got sketch written all over his face. I mean, the design of the character is perfect, too. The scars, and he's an old, balding man. But yeah, I don't think he's necessarily bad or good. He's just, you never know what he's cooking up. For the greater good, he brought back Donald without telling him. So that was really fucked up. And he's saying, hey, you know, there are bigger fish to fry. There's no time for existential crises. And Donald's like, okay, but, you ever see the movie Ghost in the Shell? Because I'm starting to question which one's more important here, Cecil.
I would be grateful. He's like, yeah, would you rather be dead? Well, didn't answer that question.
Well, I think being in, once again, the question between soul and body.
Well, yeah, I wonder if it's his, it's still his brain, though, right?
Yeah, they say that his brain was intact, his body was destroyed, basically.
Okay. I think that's a good looks.
Right, so that means the soul, then you start to question, if I'm me, that means the soul is in the brain, or is the soul real?
I don't think it's real.
The exoskeleton looked cool.
Yeah, it's probably, like, fucking strong as shit now.
Yeah, he's like, wait, I can jump 50 inches? I'm like Mac McClung.
Yeah, he still looks like Donald, though, that kind of sucks. Couldn't help me out with like a better draw line or something.
Yeah, I mean, if you're trying to keep it secret, maybe that gives the game away. All of a sudden, Donald's like, oh, wow.
He's like
6'3".
Spider-Man when he wakes up, he's just fucking ripped. See, doesn't need his glasses anymore.
It's funny. He's looking at himself in the mirror, doesn't notice anything, but there's a mole on his ass. Wait a minute. But, you know, in the first half of this season, I thought that stuff was, once again, kind of repetitive. They keep teasing it. And a lot of people, I imagine, guessed what the answer was going to be. But it's putting those characters in that moment, which was fun, because it makes Cecil seem like even more of a scumbag. And I think that adds to that character, because when he does something good, you're going to be like, oh, look, no, he's doing something good.
I think one of the better scenes, like, away from any of the action moments or anything like that was Rex and Adam Eve. I don't know. I still haven't seen the movie, so I don't know if they got into that relationship at all.
With her parents or with Rex?
With Rex.
Not really with Rex. That was more of an origin story.
Okay. So I feel like that gave better insight into...
No, you understand fully what's going on between her and her parents and why there's so much tension there. And what she's been carrying around. I said it on the last review, that spinoff was kind of like Kira. It reminded me a lot of the Akira anime movie. But yeah, that was, you know, Rexplode is a character who was so annoying when you're first introduced to him, but he's come a long way to where he's one of my favorites on the show. He's still very funny when it comes to his comic relief, but he's growing as a character. And it's in moments like this where, yeah, he wants something from Adam Eve, but in season 1, I don't think he was capable of being this mature in conversation with a character like Adam Eve.
Oh, for sure not. And yeah, like you said, even though he does want something, it felt very genuine. And I think just gave more insight into the character, especially her, like where she's at and kind of what she needed to hear, you know, especially with Mark being away and her being with her parents, probably feeling alone, but now needing that extra push to show that, yeah, you can make a difference and basically to get her on her team for that mission.
Hell yeah. Fucking love Adam.
Squad.
I'm like, she's going to team up with Alan and Peter Cullen and Mark and all that.
They really left the fucking B team though back on Earth, huh?
Oh, dude, that was so funny when he tells her to order another garlic knot. Yeah, they were getting fucking waxed. And once again, you're watching them thinking, oh, this super team kind of stinks. This is going to be easy for them. And Duplicate gets turned into a fucking sandwich.
Yeah, I was like... So, like, if the number one dies, then I guess they die, right?
Right, right. That's I was getting so scared because he was beating the crap out of all of them. I was like, dude, please, that's not the original, right?
Not even beating the crap, just dismembering.
Yeah, I know.
Like, splitting in half.
Yeah, no, he was just crunching her. Crunch, crunch, crunch until he got to the original. And then Shrinking Ray did the Ant-Man climbing into the eye. That was... so fucked up, dude, when she was trying to expand and he swallowed her.
Yeah, no, that's fucking crazy.
I was like, oh man, I'm disgusted. He's got a strong gut.
Throat goat, man.
Yeah, throat goat. He's working those throat muscles. And I thought Rex Blood was gonna, well, I guess he does kind of get out of it until that dude pulls the gun on him. But I liked how his gear and his tech was actually lethal, that he can kill when he needs to.
No, yeah, I mean, he fared, I guess, the best out of him. But, like, yeah, it kind of went away, like, when Duplicate was fighting him, like, after he killed, like, 8 of them. It's like, okay, now they're getting licks in, they're holding him back, they're kind of getting, I'm like, all right, well, the team's going to come away victorious here. But I kind of just turned, and they both fucking died, I guess, right?
I wonder if Duplicate's still alive, because it seems like Shrinking Ray, well, both of them, we didn't see, like, a final body, so.
Gotta be dead. I mean, one's getting digested by
I mean, Mark looked acid. Pretty dead, and Black Samson, remember when they brought him back?
Yeah, they do bring people back a lot, and Immortal, well, that's kind of in the name.
That was funny, too, the reference to Star Wars, Unlimited Power. It's like, bow before my unlimited power, and Immortal's like, no.
Yeah, I wonder if they're...
No, they could be dead. But that's the great thing about this show. Is that
none of them are.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe one or the other. They could do the one or the other.
Well, then I think
Ray might be dead.
But I think that's the more likely to survive. You just kind of crawl out the digestive system.
Kate seemed like she was still breathing. I guess we'll see in the next episode.
I think she's fucking dead.
That I don't want to believe that.
That's a character you have more investment with, I feel like.
Right, yeah. I just don't want to believe it because of what she's capable of.
For your sake?
Blue Skidoo right into the cartoon.
Yeah, he had to deal with Immortal.
Yeah, that's true. Well, that guy's easy to kill. Yeah, and then you have the rest of the Guardians going off into space to confront the Martian warship full of the Saquids, or the Sequids. I forget how they say it. The Hive Mind. That is going back to episode 4 of season 1. When our boy Ben Schwartz managed to escape the planet. Him explaining to the rest of the Guardians what's about to happen was so funny, dude. When he's like, I'm sorry. Perfect voice cast. He's great.
I kind of got it, though. He made me. I see where he was coming from. He didn't know this was going to happen, I don't think. You make mistakes sometimes.
I think he very clearly knew that this was going to happen. It's a funny name, Shapesmith.
It was funny that they all knew he was from Mars.
Yeah, Black Samson was upset that they all knew. He's like, I thought I was the only one. I thought I figured it out. This is my big moment.
Yeah, those things are fucking creepy.
Oh yeah, the hive mind stuff always freaks me out, man.
Yeah, that's why you don't listen to sheep, right?
I mean, I usually get my news directly from the source, so I'm able to avoid that. But when it comes to science fiction, and they even mentioned Star Trek, the fucking Borgs were terrifying.
I feel like a lot of superhero shows or sci-fi have that aspect to it, where there's always like something that's taking control of the minds of the Earthlings.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like that it could happen to me, but I like it in my sci-fi because it freaks me out. You know, it gives me the heebie-jeebies. And these motherfuckers just, you need like Daenerys on the back of Drogon, just a fucking unlimited flamethrower to get rid of these guys, because they're disgusting.
Yeah, what is that? You're like, what arcade game is that? One of the gun games, but it's like just a bunch of things are coming at you like that, the little like crawlies. It's probably like Resident Evil or something. But yeah, it was funny, like if you watch in the background some of the characters, like while one character's fighting him, they're just punching just the fucking glob. That's all I could do. I guess I'll just start punching this wall of fucking extraterrestrial octopi. Is it Rick and Morty too? They have that. Isn't that an episode?
Yes. Yeah, I think that is Rick and Morty as well. Well, this show does that so well, taking the different sci-fi tropes and bits and incorporating them into their story in a way that really tests the characters. That's another aspect that I really like, is as powerful as they are, there are limitations that come up time and time again. So they have to think on their feet. They have to be creative, or sometimes they fucking die.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, it does make you feel a little bit more suspense, especially with that cliffhanger ending. Seeing those two characters presumably dead, because usually an episode ends like that. You're like, all right, well, they'll figure it out. Adam Eve will get the shield back up and Robot will get the pulse thing he's trying to make and they'll defeat the Martians and save the day. But it's like, no, we just saw those two characters get fucking die, like obliterated. So when we come back, we'll probably see fucking three of those characters just dead or taken over.
Yeah, that seems like such a big problem that needs to be taken care of. So that means somebody's going to die. There is going to be a cost for getting rid of or stopping that Martian invasion. And, you know, going back quickly to like Mark and Amber's relationship, it looked like she was going out to the club, right? She took that phone call from her friends. I ain't waiting around here for Spaceman.
You gotta live your life too.
Right. Well, I'm thinking that their relationship is not gonna last long. It seems like he's destined to be with Adam Eve. Just makes more sense.
Yeah, it's like the meme. It's like, why are you out in space fighting Martians? You should be at the club.
No, Mark is another one who really should be at the club. That man doesn't get a break. I like the touch of having him wear the Viltrumite uniform when he's helping with the cleanup in the beginning of the episode. He looked cool in it. He looked regal. Don't get any ideas, buddy.
I don't know what school you take 2 months off of and you come back and you're like, I'll just join back. I'll just go back to college. I feel like you would fail out pretty quick.
I don't know. Maybe his parents are donors or something like that. Maybe he's just nice at ball.
Yeah, he should get on scholarship or something.
And I like the little thread that they left us of going through Omni-Man's old books, that maybe there's a secret hidden there, a way to beat the Viltrumites, something that can tip the scales. Because that's really fun. Like I said, I'm a sucker for all that shit. So when they're talking about...
just a bunch of Nancy Drew novels. I really like them.
Just goosebumps.
Yeah. Shit's scary as hell.
Mark, the message is in the literature. Your media literacy is terrible.
But that like kind of, I guess, mid-credit scene or whatever, that did get a bit hyped because we didn't really know. We thought Alan was dead too, right? That's another one.
No, yeah, we thought that this guy fucking unplugged his machine and it made him stronger. Put him in the chamber.
Well, they said he can compete with Viltrumites now, right?
Yeah, I guess that's the hope. I mean, he got his shit rocked, but it's not like he was paper thin against the Viltrumites. He was a decent punching bag. Now with the upgrade, he's kind of green now. Is that what happens? Or is that just the lighting? I don't know. But he's got bigger muscles.
Yeah, they could put together a pretty decent squad. I just wonder, I guess their move would be to maybe try to help Nolan escape.
Yeah, that guy Nolan, you just can't trust him yet.
Do they even know about like if Nolan? I guess not, right?
No, they wouldn't know.
That's something Mark would have to tell him.
Yeah, so Alan's tasked with going back to Earth and then bringing Mark back in order for them to discuss what their next moves are.
That would be sick, a fucking... Viltrumite jailbreak?
Well, based on what people say about the Viltrumites, dude, is that they literally are, like, impossible to fucking kill. So they got to be cooking up something huge. But I like that, you know, the old man Viltrumite, he was the first one to rebel. Now we have Mark.
I feel like they would have nice jails there for some reason. Like, Judgment's brutal, but, like, the jails are, you know, they have a nice bed, comforter, maybe a TV in the room.
Yeah, it's like jails in Denmark.
Yeah.
Nice little heated bed. Mini bar in the room.
Thermostat. Shit gets cold like a nice hotel room.
Daily massage.
But if you're guilty, you know, guillotine.
Oh, yeah. You know, you're being tortured for 21 straight days in front of your family. But we hope you enjoyed your stay. All right. Well, anything else you want to comment on the episode before we take a couple of fan questions?
Not really. I think, like you said, good episode. Interesting to see what they're going to do with these last three. I just hope it's something that, especially after the way it is, satisfying and kind of keeps intrigue going. And maybe they kind of got the hint that like, all right, let's try to make it so next season is out in a reasonable time and an actual whole season. But if they take another year and a half off, 2 years, I wonder if the show can last.
I don't think so, right? I mean, it seems like that would kill the show. Not only just from a, you know, just from an executive standpoint of this just isn't worth it. I hate to say it.
Right. It's hard to gauge right now because it's a week until the release. So maybe we'll see like the online discourse pick up a little bit. But I feel like last season there really wasn't much. Not as much as season one, for sure.
Oh, yeah. No way. And people enjoyed it. But the hype around it, I mean, so many people, even in my own life, haven't watched.
Right. And it's not like waiting a year and a half for the season finale of Game of Thrones. Like, I feel like you've earned that, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%. Like, even when you were talking about Breaking Bad, you know, when you're 5 seasons in, you could take that sort of risk. But this was a massive risk. And I understand that you had the writer's strike and still even COVID at that time, which is fine. But you've fumbled the comeback as well, because there's no reason that these 8 episodes should have been split up. No reason whatsoever. If you had to have waited, it's the same mistake that they made with Tenet. they get too anxious and impatient and they decide, you know what, people want something, we'll give them the first four. Well, that just pissed off people even more.
No, yeah.
And you would have been better off waiting until right this week. You could have did the nice 2-episode premiere and then 6 weeks for season two.
Yeah, in hindsight, if this was the first episode of season two, I think would have played out so much better. Or even think about it this way, like, what, 4 episodes? This could have started a month ago.
Yeah.
Because we would be up to episode 5 this week, so like...
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. I don't know why they just didn't wait till early 2024. Like I said, they got too antsy. Hate when that happens. All right, let's take some fan questions. We've got some, you know, just general fan questions about film, pop culture, video games, all that good stuff.
Jets are doing fucking nothing this free agency.
Well, you guys already have the championship supporting cast. What do you mean? What more do you want?
I don't know, a lineman? Just one, maybe?
Oh, now you need a lineman.
Yeah. Happy for Saquon, though. Finally on a decent team.
I'm happy for him, honestly. I really am. It hurts that it's within the division, but the Giants aren't doing anything. The Giants are a mess. So I'd like to see what he can do behind a good line, good culture, good quarterback.
No, that offense looks scary.
Like Tiki Barber saying, you're dead to me. Like, shut up, Tiki Barber.
Football,
there's so much turnaround, so you can't really get too upset. My guys,
I hate
leave.
Old players who are sour. And Paul Pierce was for a while. He just would never give LeBron any credit. Tiki Barber, I think, still holds a lot of resentment for retiring a year early before they win the Super Bowl.
Yeah, poor Tiki, dude. That was brutal. And it's so funny because he wanted the career in media that Michael Strahan has. He thought that was going to be him. All right, let's take some questions.
That's for the fan to decide.
Yay! People, you call up to the show, you better be ready. That's what you're supposed to do. Sitting there arguing and trying to spell your name and all of this other stuff. It's not your show, it's my show. I'm giving you the opportunity to speak your mind. Don't call up here unless you got something to say.
This one here from Joshua C. Sipes. I hope I'm saying that right. Simple question, Walter White or Tony Soprano? Why don't you just ask us Jordan or LeBron? It's LeBron. In terms of like who's a
it's
better...
kind of like the same. Like, it's like without Tony Soprano, there's no Walter White. Same thing. You can argue with... Although I think LeBron probably would have done fine if there was no Jordan before him. But, you know, kind of set the groundwork and the base for, I guess, especially within TV, for those kind of stories, those kind of characters to take a leading role.
Yeah, it's like Goku's influence on all the characters that came after him. Rest in peace, Akira Toriyama. But All Might, the creator of My Hero, said it. He's like, All Might's my Goku. Because I loved Goku so much. And many people have said that. And then you can go even further and say Goku's a version of Superman. But I think that Walter White, when you just combine... Breaking Bad's way more driven by its narrative, whereas Sopranos is more driven by the themes. So I think there's a bit more depth to the Tony character. There's a bit more mystery there. Whereas Walter White, you kind of get what his character is about. It's very obvious. But still, it's so fun because he's so clever. He's such a madman. And the acting performance is the best. It's the best leading acting performance in TV history.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go Walter White.
It's not hard to make Tony Soprano cool. Like you said, like thematically, like same thing with like what Scorsese does with his mob characters, like run the surface level. And like it does make this very cool environment. But, you know, as the show progresses, as his films progress, you get more into the character and you realize, you know, the downfalls of that way of living. But like on the surface, when Tony is doing Tony shit, like it is undoubtedly just a very cool character. Like he's got the swagger to him, and he's just got this presence. Walter White is none of that, but they find a way to make him that.
Yeah, the transformation from dorky chemistry teacher to badass.
Because he's doing the nerdiest shit ever, and you're like, fuck, man, this guy's cool as shit. Whereas like, yeah, Tony's just, you know, the kind of mobster archetype. On the surface, so it's not hard to get people to watch it from that point of view. We're like, hell yeah, Tony Soprano, go beat the fuck up, beat the shit out of this guy, you know?
Well, there's also a way to make that very goofy and cheesy.
I think at times Sopranos runs into that, especially as the seasons progress. But I mean, Tony Soprano, it's like the opposite of the King of the Hill meme when it's like when he finds out he skips all the Melfi scenes.
Oh, okay.
like that, I like that's my favorite part of Tony Soprano is those Melfi scenes. The I struggle with that word so much. The vulnerable side of him.
Right.
I think that's what makes him a great character. Yeah, it is a tough one. I want to lean towards Walter, but I think it's as close as it can be.
This question here from B_Allen53. Am I the only one who thinks Emma Stone clearly deserved that over Lily? No, you're not the only one, because I'm sure there are many people out there who thought that Emma Stone gave the best performance of the year. It was a great movie, a performance that required a lot out of her, a lot of athleticism and change. The character is constantly evolving, and performances like Lily Gladstone's don't get rewarded all that much. That's why I was so surprised by Cillian Murphy's win, because we just love the transformation, and that's what Emma Stone is doing, and she does it wonderfully.
Well, yeah, Emma Stone's arguably the top five actress working today. And yeah, I think their performances were right up there. Like, I don't get people who are like, obviously I realize the implications of Lily winning and what a great moment that would have been. But for people to be like, cry robbery, it's either you really wanted, like, it's either that you wanted Lily to win and you're disappointed that she didn't, which is fine, or you just didn't see both movies. Because I think if any person watches those two movies, you'd be like, those are two great performances, either one really deserving to win.
I do find it hard to believe that somebody watched Killers of the Flower Moon without watching Poor Things, and they're so passionate about it. Like, they've got the Killers of the Flower Moon poster in their room.
Yeah, and I think, like, leading up to it, like, the marketing behind it, could she be the first Native American to win Best Actress and things like that played into it, and then for it not to happen. But, I mean, just because that's a narrative going in doesn't necessarily mean that's what it's going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, we see that all the time. And other things, not just award shows, but in sports, you know, the narrative gets played up so much and then people just get disappointed when that's not the case. But yeah, if like if Carrie Mulligan won, then yeah, I would understand.
And I think there's also something to say about Scorsese's later movies never winning Oscars. And I think that's because he's holding the mirror up to parts of American society that we'd like to forget. So those movies haven't been rewarded. They've been nominated, but he hasn't won Best Director. He hasn't won a producing Oscar. None of his actors have won for acting. And it is kind of shocking, even going beyond that, when you look at his full filmography and the fact that he's only won, I guess he's won two, because The Departed won Best Picture and he was producer, that he's won two out of all of his nominations, out of his, you know, 50-plus year career. It does seem like an oversight. Like, how the hell did this happen?
Yeah,
but that one felt like the one. It was like, yeah, Killers of the Flower Moon's not going to win in any of the other categories. Just going in, it felt like it was hers.
No, it got closer towards the end. Emma Stone gained momentum. And I think like the line was going into it, like she was only like +130. Like gambling wise, wasn't that big of an upset. Yeah, I don't think it was that big of an upset. And I kind of prefer that, like in the Oscars, because I feel like it's just, especially this one, going into it, you felt like you knew everything, like who's going to win. So I mean, there were a couple twists and turns, I think that being the most prominent one, which I think makes it more exciting.
Yeah, and Lily Gladstone, how old is she? 37 years old, soon to be in her 40s. We all know that women in their 40s in Hollywood, they just can't, they have too many roles to take on. So I'm sure she's going to have many, many more opportunities to be nominated for an Oscar.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. If you're a huge fan of Lily Gladstone, I understand why, you know, this sucks, because Emma Stone's going to be Emma Stone regardless. She's already super established, going to be a star for a long time. I think for someone trying to really make their name and trying to cement themselves in Hollywood, winning an Oscar, and we see it all the time, you winning an Oscar does not guarantee you longevity or success in the future, but it does give you a better shot at that.
Yeah, it's not what it used to be, but still something that can give you a little boost. But it looks like she's somebody who so many people within the industry have recognized, whoa, she's a great talent. Let me get her in my movie. Because there was just an announcement, the next director that she's working with, I can't remember who it is, but a pretty prominent director.
And a couple of things about the Oscars, like doing that whole montage about stunt coordination. It's like, it's just annoying. Like, yeah, okay, we can give you a little bit moment in the Oscars, but we're not going to do an award. Maybe they have it in the pipeline, and that was kind of like a tease for it, but it just comes off disingenuous. And also, and I know some people liked it, but like the extended nominations where like the person would come out and like glaze the nominee for 2 minutes.
Yeah, you only complained about that when it was Rita Moreno. You got something to say?
I just wasn't a fan of it, because I'm like, all right, well, we extended the show, we added this, but we're still going to play off the actual winners. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, I don't know. Maybe I'm just too hard to satisfy when it comes to these things, but people complain about how long it is and how it drags out, but you put something in that makes it drag even longer, extend the show a half hour, start an hour earlier, which I enjoy, but then you still do things like play off actual winners in quote unquote less important categories because they're very selective on who they allow to speak and don't. But if we're really there to appreciate film and the nominees and the winners, you would think that would be a priority.
Well, you have to watch the Oscars like I watch it. When it gets boring, I just put on something else.
Yeah.
And then I go back to the Oscars and I'm like, oh, look, I tuned right back in when Robert Downey Jr. won.
But it's just so much better to Emma Stone, Poor Things, and play a clip of her performance. I don't need someone who probably wrote a speech the night before saying the most vague complimentary things about her for 2 minutes.
Yeah, the Nick Cage, Paul Giamatti one was worth it.
Yeah, no, that was pretty good. It wasn't that bad. Like, once I got used to it and expected it, it wasn't that bad. But the first time, I'm like, wow, this shit's going to take forever.
Yeah, I'm starting to think you have something against Rita Moreno, but whatever. Oh, good question here from Nick. Is there a modern, last 20 years or so, equivalent to someone with Akira Toriyama's influence? So, yeah, a few days ago, the writer, creator of Dragon Ball Z, one of the most influential animes, mangas of all time, passed away, sadly, at the age of 68. And this question got me thinking because I saw it when it came in. I really don't think that there's an equivalent. Like, names that popped into my head in terms of just pure global influence. Kojima, Shigeru Miyamoto from Nintendo.
Well, it's like the thing, like, with Miyazaki, another winner. Pretty funny that he didn't show up. But, like, I feel like his influence within anime, like, spread out with all these great movies. But I think it still only reaches a certain group. People who... like I feel like Dragon Ball kind of like transcended anime. Like you didn't have to be an anime. Like I feel like if you're an anime fan, you're gonna watch those movies. If you're not an anime fan, you probably still watch Dragon Ball Z growing up.
But just creators in general, like yeah. From any country around the world, who's close over the last 20 years or so with that sort of impact? I don't think there's anybody close, because you can argue Goku's just as popular now as, say, Mickey Mouse or Bugs Bunny. He's that iconic of a character. He's somebody that you can go to the far reaches of the world, show them a picture of Goku, and they're going to know who that is type
well,
of
yeah,
fame.
Well, yeah, a lot of our characters that drive box office or viewerships have been established for a while.
Right, like Spider-Man would be our equivalent almost.
Yeah, Spider-Man, Batman, Superman. It is tough, but I also think if you like ask people who that was beforehand, they probably wouldn't know.
But they know Goku, without a doubt.
Sure.
And I think that counts.
I've been saying Yamcha in the Trump voice for the past 3 days.
Oh, we love Yamcha. We love Yamcha. Don't we love Yamcha, folks?
We love Yamcha, don't we?
I love the Stephen A. when he answers the questions. They were asking, who would you rather have? Who would you pick in a fight, Goku or Vegeta? And he kept calling Vegeta Vegeta. And he's like, I'm going to go with this guy, Goku. I don't know. I just like him better. And somebody was like, his instincts for somebody who has no idea what he's talking about are incredible. But yeah, I don't think there's a mod, like in terms of just like a creator, like Kojima with the Metal Gear games, his influence on the video game industry, Miyazaki, his influence on animation, because you can also argue the influence he had on Western animators, especially the Pixar guys. You know, how far reaching does it go when you want to add in those things? But I think with Toriyama, he's just got every box checked. It's like, maybe they don't know his name, but they know the main character. The main character's an iconic mascot. The way that his stories were told were also influential on other animes and other superhero stories in general. Just storytelling overall. You know, people took from him, you know, the powers, the way that he called his arcs sagas.
Right.
Like, and you can't tell the story of pop culture over the last 30 years without talking about Dragon Ball, you know?
Yeah, it is unique, too. Like, especially even with someone like Oda, like with One Piece, it's different because, like, it's just, I'm sure they've had other projects, but, like, this is their, you know, this is their baby. This is their, what they've worked their entire life on, whether it be Dragon Ball, One Piece, or anything else. When you look at like our storytellers, you know, so let's take, you know, just Nolan, right? Just one for Oppenheimer. It's just, you don't really, different people associate him with different things.
Right. Yeah, no, that's actually not a terrible answer, Christopher Nolan.
But like, it's more in filmmaking as a whole, or certain, like it's, like you were talking about with him, like, you know, Goku, like, it's transcendent. I mean, obviously Batman, but
that Nolan changed the landscape of filmmaking.
Like one, sure.
And then you can factor that into the argument.
Yeah, of course. But it's just unique to have one project be so widely known, you know, like that's what you associate with right away.
Yeah, no, it is. And like you said, it does transcend anime because it brought so many people into anime that didn't even know what they were watching. They wouldn't think to call it anime. This was just Dragon Ball.
Cartoons. Right. Just like a cartoon growing up.
Yeah, it was so big for us, dude, growing up, watching it on Toonami and Cartoon Network. So he's a character, like I said, dinner table characters. Does your mom know Goku? Maybe not the name, but you show her a picture, she's going to know what that is.
I don't know. I asked her for a Super Saiyan 4 Goku action figure 1 year. I didn't get it.
Oh, yeah. I remember this. That was tragic.
Yeah. But I wrote it in a way that she would never, like, know what that was. It's like, I wrote it by, like, I was like, SSJ4 Goku. That's it.
You literally wrote it like you were on a subreddit.
Yeah.
Like, she was knee-deep in the lore. It's like, oh, they didn't have SSJ4, but I got you Future Trunks. Is that all right?
Yeah, like, I didn't, like, give any context, or I just figured she would get it.
You're cool, right? You're a cool mom.
I did see the exact same action figure that I wanted to get in like, a smoke shop once. I didn't buy it, though, because I thought it was a weird place for it to be. I'm like, it's probably a knockoff, but it was a Super Saiyan 4 Goku action figure.
Meanwhile, it's going for $4 million now on eBay.
Dude, they had it. Bailey's Comics. Every time I walked in, I couldn't afford it.
This question here from Matt. What's the biggest snub from the Oscars? I guess a lot of people are saying Lily Gladstone, but I'm trying to think with other categories where I was
hearing expecting. Downey was a bad win now, all of a sudden. It was a great win. Zone of Interest winning for sound, I think, was pretty awesome.
Oh, okay. That's what they won for? Because I didn't see when they had won.
It won for sound and international feature.
Oh, okay.
Because Oscar voters are a lot of times very dumb, and you could see that by the anonymous whatever it is, just how stupid they are and how they don't really watch things.
Oh, yeah. When they're talking about their process.
So it's nice to see Zone of Interest be recognized for sound because of how important the sound is to the whole basis of that movie. The movie doesn't work without its sound design, rather than being like, ooh, Oppenheimer had cool clicks and noises and stuff. Even though Oppenheimer had terrific sound design, but, like, you know what I'm saying? Where it's like one is very much more obvious than the other, but way more important to the story than another. That's what I like about, that's what I always prefer, like, with the best original song. I hate when they pick songs that play at the end of the credits. Give me a song that's in the movie that drives a plot, that's important to the film.
Yes. Yes and no. Because I guess in a way that this checks both boxes, the opening Bond songs. I don't mind because Skyfall is a fantastic song. Adele deserved it for that. I don't even know if she won. I think she won.
That Cheeto song fucking sucked. Why was that nominated?
Which song?
For the Flamin' Hot Cheeto movie? Becky G?
I haven't heard it, so I cannot pass judgment.
It's just the most generic bullshit song that you would hear on the radio.
It was nominated?
It was nominated. Dude, we could have had Dua Lipa.
Can we have an honest discussion about Billie Eilish's ability to sing?
You don't think she's good?
I couldn't understand a word she was saying. It's just,
I like Billie Eilish.
I'm like, what is she? Is she okay? Is she a Phineas? Is she all right? She might be having an episode.
I thought you were going to go that route. Phineas is the real mastermind.
Well, he is the producer. And a lot of their first album sounds suspiciously like another artist we will not name, but it's always interesting how that happens.
No, I liked her performance.
You liked her performance? You sat there and you liked it? You thought to yourself, I'm enjoying this?
I don't believe you. Grammys too and the Golden Globe.
No, you didn't. You're so funny. Yeah. What do you think? You're going to meet her at a red carpet at TIFF?
Maybe.
And she listens?
I think it's a nice song. Talk trash to Dua Lipa, then we got a real fucking problem. But
I would never do that. I'm not crazy.
Yeah. What were we saying before that?
Oscar snubs.
Oh no, Gosling. Great performance. That man, he's so fucking electric.
That was another, like, it was fun. It was funny. But I thought the glazing was out of control. Like, you know, it's Ryan Gosling.
I don't know.
He looks cool. Yeah, he's hot. He's wearing sunglasses. People are like, whoa! wow.
But it's not like, you know, Bradley
Cooper. I don't know
Cooper.
If that was a whoa or wow.
It's not Bradley Cooper or Lady Gaga.
They performed at the Oscars?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
But it's just like the type of song it was, the amount of fun it was, the production into the whole thing.
It was fun.
And yeah. Just his stage presence as a, like a not singing performer. I feel like he really just fucking brought the house down in that moment.
He brought the house down?
Yeah, everyone's having a great time. Everyone's getting up. They were singing along.
Scorsese was happy.
And that's all that matters, really.
The side-by-side between Scorsese watching Eminem and Scorsese watching Ryan Gosling was very funny. I'll give him that. He was better than Eminem. Okay, one last question here. It was a good one. Oh, from Kevin, Michael, best needle drop scene of all time. That's nothing tough. Like a good needle drop. My favorite, I'll probably think of a better one and want to change this, but I love the when the shit goes down needle drop and this is the end when Danny McBride wakes up. One of my favorite scenes of all time, dude. And the Scorsese, I can't remember what song it is, but when De Niro's smoking.
Oh, yeah. What the fuck's that song? I could sing it. Well, the guitar riff. I think Layla is the best needle drop in that movie. There's so many great ones. I mean, Gimme Shelter is awesome, but when the piano part comes, such a great part to pick from that song, too. Like, that piano comes in, and then you have the voiceover, and they find all the dead bodies.
Yeah, man. Scorsese's so cool. I wish I was that cool.
Yeah, he really... he gets it.
Oh, no, dude. He's just... Once again, it's so upsetting that all these late movies are putting up donuts. Because it's like he's getting better. He's like, wait a minute, I figured out how to even make better movies.
Yeah, when's the last time he took over the award circuit? The Departed?
Yeah, The Departed. And that's essentially the only time he's done it. Who the fuck won for Best Director in 1990? Was it Kevin Costner?
That is such a weird...
Oliver Stone, okay.
What's going on?
Oliver Stone stole Scorsese's Best Director for Goodfellas.
Oh, never mind. I just saw a tweet and it's... I don't know why I thought it could have been real, but I had to check because it does sound like it could be real. So Aaron Rodgers leaving the Jets after 5 snaps to run for vice president of the United States would be the most Jets quarterback thing ever. I hope it happens. But like, I'm like, yeah, obviously that's like a made up funny tweet scenario, but I did scroll to see if anything happened with Aaron Rodgers. That would be weird though. Why would you think Kamala would just let him take up that spot? They should just let Aaron Rodgers hop on the ticket?
Yeah, Guardians has some good needle drops, too. You know,
wait, no, hold on. Oh, okay. This is okay. RFK Jr. approached Aaron Rodgers as well as former wrestler Jesse Ventura about serving as his running mate for the 2024 presidential
election. Dude, that's so funny. I was just thinking about Jesse Ventura last night. I was like, whatever happened to Jesse Ventura? He always used to be screaming about stuff.
You liked him, right?
I was a big Ventura guy. He was a terrible governor, but...
I think Aaron Rodgers just said that on Pat McAfee. It probably did happen, but now people are making jokes about it, so he's not actually going to do it.
Being one RFK heartbeat from an Aaron Rodgers presidency is crazy, but honestly not crazy enough for this
time. I want him to... I want him to throw a fucking football in the end zone. I don't care about his political aspirations.
Well, Steph Curry was saying he was going to run for president, and he was going to... First act was to be get rid of the Department of Housing. It's like, what is this? People, build your own house. You see my 3-point range? I don't want anybody living within that range.
If you had to pick a celebrity president, who would it be?
Dude, honestly, I think The Rock would be a good president.
You think so?
No.
He'd pick good movies.
He'd be good at being president. He'd be like sort of a good spokesman for the country.
Yeah, he'd be like a good king.
Exactly, right. Like, he's the emperor who, in the beginning of the movie, is fair, just, and somebody murders him.
But, like, yeah, like, you send him to, like, the UN. Like, yeah, that's our king, and it's The Rock.
Yeah, no, King Rock?
Yeah.
I have everybody in tip-top shape. No, that probably wouldn't work.
I like him. He could go heel mode if he needs to. John Cena, too. Did you see any of that weird shit?
Oh, when he came out naked?
Not that. I thought that was a funny bit, but people saying that it's a humiliation ritual for the Illuminati.
Well, dude, I hope he gets in.
I couldn't imagine living life like that, man. I just don't know. Like, what does your mind have to be to see that and not be like, oh, that's a funny bit. John Cena naked at the Oscars.
Yeah, that's why, dude, when we talk
about... Or even if you don't think it's a funny bit, maybe you think it's a terrible bit. But to know in your head, that's just a bit.
We need to maybe rethink this whole literacy thing, you know? Literacy rates, maybe they need to be lowered. more people just can't handle the internet. They can't handle information because then their entire lives become they're just looking for signs. They're looking for the symbols. You see it on every post, dude. Like if it's Jay-Z courtside and he's got his hands in certain ways, it's like, that's the Illuminati sign for I'm going to eat a baby. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. Ice Spice always gets caught flashing the Illuminati devil demonic.
Yeah, she must be having trouble with her membership. Like they're thinking, you know, you're not legit enough because she's throwing that shit up all the time.
Or if you'll see like a tweet, it'll be like, you know, like this post right here about Matthew Perry. Like, I don't see one now, but you'll see like a post about like Matthew Perry or like anybody. And then like a comment will be a bot being like, he flew me out to Vegas. Like that, like that's my ex. It's like just these spam bots, just they're getting smarter in the sense like they can know what the post says and take words out of that to put the reply in, but it's still like the weirdest replies ever where you can be like, okay, that's a fucking robot. They'd be like, yeah, Jameis Winston just signed with the Browns. It's like, yeah, Jameis Winston got me pregnant.
Did you have you ever seen the American Dad with the Illuminati? The conspiracy theory that in order to heal the nation after the Civil War, they said that a black man invented peanut butter. Dude, the bit where every time they find a new clue unraveling the conspiracy and the Illuminati guy crushes nuts in his hands kills me every time. Whenever somebody talks about the Illuminati, I immediately think of the Illuminati. All right, guys, that does it for this episode of Nerd Soup. We will be back, I guess, sometime next week, possibly, to review Invincible Episode 6, depending on how this one does. So run it up. Tell your friends about it. And hopefully Invincible Episode 6 is coming out next week. There's no pushback. Aaron, thank you so much for joining me. Any plans for the rest of the day?
I'm hungry.
All right, Ron DeSantis. hungry. The way we said that at the same time, this motherfucker's gonna appear in our rooms.
Yeah, if you look in the mirror and say hungry three times, yeah. He shows up in a bowl of spaghetti.
Shows up in his high heels. All right, guys, we'll see you very soon. Thanks for listening.
Wow, that was probably our best review yet. Hey guys, Aaron the Nerd Soup Monkey here with a brief shameless plug before we end the video. Do you ever feel like you don't have an adequate amount of nerd soup in your life? Like you're going to bed hungry and yearning for the nonsensical yet entertaining nutrients our podcasts provide? Well, we've come up with the perfect solution. The Nerd Soup Fan Question Podcast, exclusively available to our Patreon supporters. You can sign up now by visiting patreon.com/nerdsoup, and for the price of only $1 per month, you'll receive exclusive access to our weekly podcast, where we answer your questions that don't make it to the main show. And while you're there, you can check out the other rewards we offer to our patrons, like stickers, mugs, t-shirts, behind-the-scenes footage, and appearing in the credits at the end of our videos. And that's exactly what we're gonna do right now. Roll the names of the nerds who make Nerd Soup possible. The reason why the crypto crash didn't send our lives spiraling down a black hole of no return. Alright, I'll stop talking so you can listen to this jazzy-ass music while checking if Bo spelt your name wrong in the credits.